primroses were over, towards the edge of the wood where the ground became open and sloped down to an old fence and a brambly ditch beyond. Only a few fading patches of pale yellow still showed among the dog's mercury and oak tree roots. In places the grass was gone altogether, and everywhere there were clusters of dry droppings through which nothing but the ragwort would grow. 100 yards away at the bottom of the slope ran the brook, no more than 3 feet wide, half choked with kingcups, watercress and blue brook lime, close to the wild cherry where the blackbird sang. This one had not bloomed, and its flat spread of leaves was almost hidden under the long grass. The hundreds of individual birds merging and blending in a mounting excitement into swarms, and these swarms coming loosely and untidily together to create a great, unorganized flock, thick at the center and ragged at the edges, which breaks and reforms continually like clouds or waves. There was a smell of damp leaves and moss, and everywhere the splash of water went whispering about. Just inside, the brook made a little fall into a pool, and the sound, enclosed among the trees, echoed as though in a cave. Roosting birds rustled overhead, the night breeze stirred the leaves, here and there a dead twig fell. The moon was low now, and the light, wherever it slanted through the trees, seemed thicker, older and more yellow. From a thick pile of dead leaves beneath a holly tree, lined on either side with fern and sprouting fireweed, the fern moved slightly in the breeze, but along the path there was nothing to be seen except a scatter of last year's fallen acorns under an oak. What was in the bracken? Empty in a darkening moonlight and leading gently downhill into the deep shadow of a grove of ilex trees, beside him in the bracken, a desolate, grassless woodland, the before dawn returning owls, scattering his droppings over the sky, and this is why the grass and the trees grow so thick on the world, until the very beetles fell off the grass stems. The moon had almost set and the night was now dark, but they could just see the water faintly shining as it flowed and could just make out on the further side a thin belt of nut trees and alders. Somewhere beyond, a plover called 3 or 4 times and was silent. A chill breeze was moving. The stream bordered the farther edge of the wood. On the other side lay open fields. The bank sloped down again into clumps of alder, among which the stream could be heard chattering over gravel. Between them and the stream itself stood half-grown clumps of purple loosestrife and fleabane, which would not flower for nearly 2 months yet. The only blooms were a few early meadowsweet and a patch of pink butterbur. The orderly forest of small glaucous trees with their columns of black and white bloom, wheat and barley he knew and had once been in a field of turnips. The earth was soft and crumbling with the scattering of the weeds that are found in cultivated fields. Fumitory, charlock, pimpernel and mayweed all growing in the green gloom under the bean leaves. As the plants moved in the breeze, the sunlight dappled and speckled back and forth over the brown soil, the white pebbles and weeds, yet in this ubiquitous restlessness there was nothing alarming, for the whole forest took part in it, and the only sound was the soft, steady movement of the leaves. From the wood across the river came the clattering of wood pigeons' wings among the branches. The very plants were unknown to them. Pink lousewort with its spray of hooked flowers, bog asphodel and the thin-stemmed bloom of the sundews rising above their hairy fly-catching mouths, all shut fast by night. In this close jungle all was silence, a narrow belt of silver birch and rowan, beyond was a thin hedge, and beyond that a green field between 2 copses. As the sun rose higher, shortening the shadow and drawing the dew from the grass, the sun flecked shade among the edge of the ditch. Under a flowering wild cherry, the white petals spun down around them, covering the grass. Cherry dew, knee deep, up to the edge of the woodland, pushing in and out of the clumps of red campion and ragged robin, a little way into the trees and nut bushes, to scuffle in the leaf mud. Below them broadened out the wood edges, curved outwards, away from the brook, just by that white patch of stitchwort. The blue tit that had been swinging on a bramble stopped his acrobatics and flew into the wood. Every blade of grass, every bracken frond was bent, dripping and glistening. The smell of last year's oak trees filled the air. Across the field, the bloom of the cherry tree hung sodden and spoiled. The pattering and whispering of the rain sounded softly but distinctly. The field and woods were shut in under it, emptied and subdued. The thrush should have been singing. A soaking bumblebee crawled over a thistle bloom. The wet glass glittered, and nearby a nut tree sparkled iridescent, winking and gleaming as its branches moved in the light wind. Between the copse and the brook, the slope was covered with pale lilac lady swamps, each standing separately in the grass, a frail stalk of bloom above a spread of leaves. The breeze dropped and the little valley lay completely still, held in long beams of light, and enclosed on either side by the lines of the woods. Upon this clear stillness, like feathers at the surface of a pool, fell the calling of a woman, dappled with red patches of maybe, scattered rosses of orange, and fragments of summer with feathery light.